How you doing, Lake Taps? All right. Woo! Yeah, give these guys a hand. So just so you know, there's always this tension with music and the stage. It's not performance, but we appreciate them. They draw us into worship. They worship God along with us. Like, we're not worshiping these guys, right? I mean, they're good, but I mean, it's cool. But they lead us. And so we love you guys a lot, and we're thankful for your leadership. So you guys have made it here on Seahawks Sunday. This is our first 10 o'clock game. How many of you came to the first service because you knew it was a 10 o'clock game? How many of you know that our services last longer than an hour? How many of you are going to skip communion because you know it's the last thing that we do that you can get out of without getting caught by anybody? We will bar the doors. And I got a lot to say today. So appreciate what Jason said this morning. And you got to think back to the guy with the timeshare. Anybody here got a timeshare? It's like a ball and chain sometimes, right? And you're like, how could God possibly use a timeshare to advance his kingdom? Well, that's how. Like, you gain points, and you give it to the pastor, I mean, the music guy, right? And then they go on vacation. That's how God uses these things. Yeah, nice try. And then the professor, you know, how many times does this guy go out for coffee? But he goes out for coffee that one time with that one guy who's asking that one question. And it seems like it's so everyday and so typical and so like it's not a big deal. But in our everyday lives, God is doing big things. So I want you guys to keep that floating in your head because I know the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, even Sunday can look pretty ordinary and typical, right? And we can overlook the fact that why would God have anything to do with my life in this moment? I mean, I sat at a marching band competition for 8 hours yesterday. How can God use that? Like, what's the big thing God's doing with that? I'm waiting to see. Like, I don't know. I'm waiting. I'll keep you posted. But I love that we sing about the overwhelming, never-ending, reckless love of God, because never-ending means that God is with us every day, not just the good days, not just at your best days. Like, not you know, like you take the selfie and the 20th one looks good, so you keep it? God's there for the selfie, like this hashtag, oops, not ready selfie. Well, we don't look great, the bags under our eyes come out, or the emotion that we don't want other people to see comes out, or the mess on our house comes out, the real us can come out. And so it's an overwhelming, never-ending, reckless love of God. It chases me down, fights till I'm found, leaves the 99. And that's where the shepherd has those 99 sheep in the fold, and that one is missing, he's counting, and one, just one. And yet he leaves, and he goes, and he grabs them. So today I want to talk with you about the everyday, and think about the real you, the you that maybe isn't the best version of you, but just the you, like you are who you are. And I want you to think about your limitations. Now, we don't always do this at church. A lot of times we think about all the good, like our best is yet to come, and we get so excited about the future that we have. But I want you to see that the future that you have is shaped by the limitations that you have. Like, don't bury the limitations, don't run from the limitations, embrace your limitations. They don't define who you are, but they direct your next steps. And we're going to talk more of that. And ultimately, what I want you to see today is that I have a lead role in God's mission. You have a lead role in God's mission. Let's say that together. I have a lead role in God's mission. Chances are, what you know is, I have limitations. Like, I have confinements. I have restrictions. I have weaknesses. I have defects. I have drawbacks. I have faults. I have flaws. You also have a role, a leading role in God's mission. We're in a story of Ruth. It's called Ruth. There's three main players. Naomi is her mother-in-law, Ruth is the daughter-in-law, and then this guy named Boaz. And the thing that's cool about this book in the Bible, well, four chapters long, it's an easy read, it's kind of a novel, and we get to understand how God is busy in our everyday lives doing these big things that we don't even know that he's doing. And so today we see Ruth, and the bigger story is that Naomi's married to a guy named Elimelech, and they're Jews in Judah, and there's a famine, which means that back then famines weren't just physical, it was also a sign because God said, I'll give you a land flowing with milk and honey. And so when the land of God's people goes dry, it means that there's something not cool between them and their relationship with God. Like, there's been some disobedience and God is getting their attention. Instead of remaining in that tension, Elimelech takes his wife, Naomi, and his two sons, and they go to Moab. And we talked about how Moab is like going to the dark side. It's not just going to the nearest place close by. It's like going to a place that has never been in alignment with what God was doing through his people. They were always in opposition. And so he goes there with his family for food. A lot of bad stuff happens. He dies. Both of her sons die. And Naomi is left in this really bad situation. And sometimes when we wander from God, we know people that seem to get by just fine apart from God. And we know other people whose life gets very difficult. There's no easy answers as to why this happens to Naomi. All we know is that she went out on her own. She came to grips with herself, the limits that she has as a person. And when the food came back to Judah, she was ready to come back to be who God had called her to be. In the process, her sons had married before they died, and they had wives, and Ruth was the daughter-in-law of the now passed son. And so Ruth has a strong confession that she will return, even though she's a Moabite, she will come back with Naomi to Judah. And she has that amazing, and you may have recognized those words with, "Your people are my people, your God is my God, where you live, I will live, where you die, I will die." It's this cool, like all-in commitment that Ruth has to follow the ways of God. And so today we pick up Ruth, and we kind of left last week on that high of an amazing like commitment and confession, and like, "God, I'm all in with you." And now it's rubber hits the road, and Ruth arrives with Naomi in Bethlehem. What I want you to see today is that she's a widow. And a widow back then, there's books written about widows in the Old Testament. It is a hard, hard life. Not only is she a widow, she is barren, unable to have kids. She had been married for 10 years and no children. That is almost a curse that will go with you. Now you are almost untouchable. Nobody, even though you may be young and single, who wants to marry a woman who is barren? And not only is she a widow who's barren, she is from the dark land of Moab. And so all these things are stacked against her. And I want you to feel the things that are stacked against you. How do you not measure up? Where do you fall short? Where do people look at you and disqualify you? Yeah, you're good, but you don't have this. Here's why you're not my guy. What is it that is your fault and your flaw and your defect and your drawback? And here's the crazy thing, because I think we understand this part. We understand that God wants to come in and to somehow meet us in our brokenness. Like, we're okay with that. And I feel like there's people of faith who come to God for God to meet them in their need. But here's where we miss it. God doesn't only meet Ruth in her need today. He has Ruth contribute. She's not just a charity case. And that's the deal for you and I. Even though we have limits, we're not God's charity case. In fact, you have a lead role in God's mission. Say it with me. I have a lead role in God's mission. So here's the story. I'm going to read this to you, and I'll give you an update as when the narrator speaks. And when the narrator speaks, it's just as overarching, like on the loudspeaker voice. And then we get conversations, and then we get another update by the narrator, and then we get more conversation. And so the narrator gives us an update. Ruth, Naomi, Boaz, they're not aware of these updates, just us, the reader. So the narrator says, "Now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz." He just drops that out there. It's one of those little tricks that they would have done in an oral culture where you just heard stories. He's kind of giving them a heads up, like there's a guy who lives, Elimelech, your dead husband. Like he has this person in his family, Boaz. So now back to our story. So Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor." And Naomi said to her, go ahead, my daughter." So they've come back to Bethlehem. It is in the harvest season. The famine is gone. Now they're getting grain. And I want you to feel this tension of sometimes when you and I give our life to God, like when we give our life to God, we feel like God's going to do big things with us. Like, "Come on, God, you're a big God. Like, right, big things, am I everyday things? Like, where's the big thing you're doing with me?" And I don't want you to miss that Ruth gives her life in this amazing journey back from Moab to Judah. She's all in with God. "Come on, God, I'm all in with you. How are you going to use me?" And she finds herself with broken nails in the dirt and really sweaty. Sometimes we feel like the big things may not be those hard things. And so here's Ruth, sweating, dirty, broken nails. You know, when she talks to Naomi, you know, is it okay if I go pick in the field? It's not so much about permission that she's asking. It's really stating her intention. I need to go out and do what I can do. Now, again, what is her limitation? Well, she's a widow, she's barren, and she's a foreigner. What can she do? Not much. She can't do much. Like, your limitation will direct you, but it won't define you. So it directs her next steps, because what else is a widow who's barren and foreign going to do? There's only one thing they can do, and that's go glean in the field. Your limit will direct your next step. So the next step for her is going out into the field. You know, when I graduated from undergrad college, I had to wait a year for Carrie, because she was a year behind me, to get her degree. And then we got married, and then we had this weird thing where we had to buy some time before we went to grad school. And I remember that we moved close back to the Portland area, and we were young and inexperienced. And how do you get a good job that pays anything when you only have 8 months to do it? You don't like put on your resume, hey, by the way, can I get a job? I've only got 8 months. Like, no one's going to hire you, right? So she got a job at Frito-Lay, which was awesome because you had to wear a hairnet and glasses and earplugs just to put chips in a bag. It was awesome. She looked great. I didn't get a job. I was the guy who was at home and didn't have a job with his new bride. And so push comes to shove. You guys remember Labor Ready? Anybody remember Labor Ready? Yeah, Labor Ready is for desperate guys who can't get jobs, like Labor Ready. And what you do is you show up in your work clothes with your lunchbox. That's how you show up. And you sign a few papers and you wait Labor Ready, like I'm ready. And if the clock hits 10, 11, and 12, usually at that point, no one's coming by to give you work. But if you get a job between 8, 9, and 10, chances are you will be off to work. And there's times when I brought my lunch back home and ate it in my empty living room. My wife was working. And there's other times when I got work and they took us in a truck and they dumped us off at this job site. And I had my degree, my college degree on the wall, and I had a broom in my hand and I swept the cul-de-sac. And in fact, he said, when you're done with that, sweep the whole street. Evidently, I was cheaper than a street sweeper. And they drop you off and they say, we'll come back in 6 hours and pick you up. And you sweep all day long. And there's a part of us, and I don't think we feel entitlement, because we wouldn't, you may not see yourself as a lazy person, but when it comes to God, we feel entitled to understand. Like, God, if I'm going to give you my life, I need to understand what you're doing. And sometimes we don't understand what God is doing. And sometimes you got to work hard and you got to dig in with what you got. And your limit will direct your next steps. You only have so much available to you with what you have. Like, you are who you are. Let it direct you. Don't let your limit define you. There's a huge difference. I have a lead role in God's mission. Say it with me. I have a lead role in God's mission. When we get bent out of shape, when our limits define us, we get defensive and we get offended. Well, it's not fair. Yeah, I'm young and I'm experienced, and yeah, I got 8 months, but it's not fair. It's not fair for me to do that. I got a plaque on the wall that says I'm better than this broom. And if you let your limit define you, you will be offended and you'll stop and you won't take the next step. But if you let your limit direct you, and by the way, what are you defined by? I have a lead role in God's mission. He's doing something with you. Don't get taken out. Don't get taken out by that hard, hard work. So the narrator comes back in verse 3. So she went out, Ruth went out, entered a field, and began to glean behind the harvesters. As it turned out, I love that phrase, as it turned out, guess what happens next? She was working in a field belonging to Boaz. Just so happened, she picked a field of all the fields, and all Bethlehem has is fields. It's the town of bread, right? All they got is fields. As it turned out, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. She doesn't know that. Naomi doesn't know that. We know that. So I want you to picture what the harvest looks like. And so imagine they would have hired workers, and usually the men were up in the front, And they would grab a whole bunch of these stalks and take their sickle and cut it off at the base, and then this grouping would fall on the ground, and they pick another group and sickle, another group and sickle. And as these bunches laid on the ground, the women would come after them, and they would create bundles of stalk. And then once there was enough bundles, they would begin to take the bundles over to the threshing floor, and eventually the raw kernels are sifted away from the husks. And so there would be these two layers of hired workers going across Boaz's field, and then the gleaners would show up after that. The gleaners were the ones with those extreme limitations, like the widows who were foreign and barren. Or maybe they're widows who just live there in Judah, who may be local. And in Leviticus 19, we read how God wants his people to care for those who are disadvantaged. And remember, God is doing something special in the world, and he's trying to get his people to be shaped to care for others, to be full of compassion. And so we see these teaching verses, and in 19 of Leviticus, it says, when you harvest the crops of your land, do not harvest the grain along the edges of your fields. Do not pick up what the harvesters drop. Leave them for the poor and the foreigners living among you. Skip that part about the grapes. Leave them for the poor and the foreigners among you. I am the Lord your God. So if it's stalks, leave the stalks. If it's grapes, leave a few grapes. Don't go all the way along the edges. Leave some for the foreigners to pick up. So the leaders of the Jews, the rabbis, they tried to really articulate even more what this stuff would look like. And as you can imagine, there's a lot of leeway, like how much do I leave on the edge? How much do I cut the corner? Like how much do I need to give? And so they had these overarching rules which said something like, if you accidentally miss something, or let's say you drop something. If you drop something, I guess God made you drop that because you're leaving it. Like don't pick it up. If you drop it, the gleaners get it. Let's say that you mark your field wrong and there's an edge of your field that you thought was maybe not yours, but it was. And if you make a mistake, guess what? The gleaners get it. If there's a rock hiding some stalks and you didn't see it, the gleaners get it. If your field kind of peels down a hill and you don't see the stalks below and you miss it, the gleaners get it. And if you're a really organized farmer who doesn't make any mistakes and doesn't drop anything and doesn't miss anything, then the overarching rule was 1/60th of your field was to be left for gleaners. I don't know what 1/60th looks like. I'm not sure if you guys, those numbers get a little bit crazy. And as you can imagine, this was largely unenforceable. Like how are you going to force a guy? Is that 1/60th? Like, did you pick that up after you dropped it? Like, I think I maybe saw you. Oh, I didn't really drop it. I accidentally, it wasn't really, I picked it up at the last minute, like one of those amazing catches in football. Like, I didn't really hit the ground. I got it before it hit there. Compliance is a personal choice. And many, many landowners would have got away with what they could and only done what they had to do. I wonder what kind of landowner this would be. So in verse 4, the story explains that just then Boaz arrived from Bethlehem, and he greeted the harvesters. And he says, "The Lord be with you, and the Lord bless you," they answered. And it kind of puts us like on the hopeful edge of our seat, like, wow, maybe Boaz is the guy that takes his faith seriously. Like the first thing you say to your workers is, "The Lord be with you," that maybe this is a guy who cares about God in his life, and he will honor those who are in need. And so verse 5 shows up, and Boaz asks the overseer of his harvesters, the foreman of the crew, he says, who does that young woman belong to? Now, I have to confess that in this age of Me Too, I was thinking, oh great, here's a guy who's scoping out his crew. And she's new, and she's new, and come on, who's the young woman? Like, she's new and she's young, like the creepy old guy? Like, what's wrong with Boaz? Are we going there in this story? Like, come on, really? Only I thought that. You guys didn't think that? Marriage was strategic back in the day. There would have been political ties and social ties would have been done to increase your standing in community. A gleaner would have been steps below even his hired workers. Wouldn't have been on his radar. The fact that she was barren, Boaz would have had very little incentive to try to bring her on as his wife. Most commentators say it's most likely that he just doesn't know who she is. Who is this young woman who's gathering? In verse 6, the overseer replied, and this is one of my favorite lines. So the foreman, he's been watching these guys for a while, and here's his reply. She is the Moabite who came from Moab with Naomi. I think that's hilarious. Where are you from? I'm the Washingtonian who's from Washington. Well, yeah, Washington, Bonnie Lake. I'm the Washingtonian from Washington. And I almost get the feeling that the foreman's like, hey, look, Boaz. Like, and maybe he's worried that Boaz is a little too much on the generous side, and there's enough hurting people right here in Judah that you know that she's a Moabite from Moab. Hello, Moab. She's from Moab, a Moabite from Moab. Like, Moab, hello. It's like Sky Island. They don't mind trick-or-treaters from their own neighborhood, right? But y'all start busting in your kids. You feed your own kids your own candy. You know what I'm saying? I got enough kids in my own neighborhood to take care of. I'm not taking care of yours, too. And there's this underarching thing, this struggle. And we've heard about when cities are too generous with the homeless, homeless people actually come from other cities to be with this city's amazing, generous plan. And here's Boaz, and what if he gets known as the guy who's got a generous plan? She's a Moabite from Moab. Come on, Boaz. We got enough to do here with our own folks. And then the foreman begins to describe what Ruth said to him when she began her shift early that morning. He says that she said, please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters. She came into the field and has remained here from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter. And so you're starting to get the vibe that Ruth isn't afraid of hard work. Like, yeah, she's dirty, she's sweating, she got broken nails, and she's not backing down. Like, if she's there to work, she's there to work. And she isn't taking much breaks. Like, she's working hard with what she has. Does she have limits? Yes, she has limits, but she's working hard and she's working through them. And in fact, the weird thing that sometimes we miss is that she is asked to work among the sheaves. And this is your next challenge with limits. There's going to be times when you and I have our limits, and what's going to happen is your limit, like if you're divorced or if you're single or if you're in that neighborhood or you make this much money, maybe you make too much to be a Christian, maybe you don't make enough and God's not blessing you as a Christian. Whatever your limit is, sometimes there's an injustice in your culture that goes with it that people have learned to accept. And your job is going to be, I have a lead role in God's mission. Say that with me. I have a lead role in God's mission. All right. So here's Ruth. She's supposed to find her spot after the men, after the women, after the sheaves are taken to the threshing floor. Then she is supposed to come along and pick up any strands that may have been left that they missed with the sickle, or any pieces that are still laying on the ground that no one else got. But instead, she shows up, and right out of the gate, the foreman's like, can you believe that she asked to pick husks right from the sheaves? Like, she wants to wander where the wandering's good. Like, she doesn't want to wait for her group. She wants to get among the women where the sheaves are still on the ground. Yeah. She's a widow, she's barren, and she's foreign, but she is not a charity case. So why is Ruth being so aggressive? The reason why, they say, is because she's picking for two. She's picking for two. She's there, and Naomi is of the age where she can't get in the field and work. And Ruth is like, hey, I get the letter of the law, and the letter of law says, take care of the widow and the oppressed, and the letter of the law says, if it falls, leave it. The letter of the law says, if you don't get it, then leave it. The letter of the law says 1/60th, but she's like, if I go by the letter of the law, then we're going to miss the spirit of the law. And the spirit of the law says, take care of the widows and the oppressed. There's an injustice going on in Judah, says the Moabitess woman. Like, how do you come in a foreign land and not fall in line with their system? How do you do that? Because you have a lead role in God's mission, like you and I do. And your limit is going to direct your next step, but it doesn't define you. You're defined by your lead role, and God's going to put you in a situation that needs to be fixed. So Ruth lays it out. She's taking a huge risk with this. She's like, can I pick among the sheaves? I love what one author said. He said that Ruth was only a beginner. She was learning in the ordinary, everyday moments of life what it means to be a daughter of God. and the kind of bold living that loving God produces. Sometimes you and I are going to need to challenge century-old traditions. Jesus did this all the time. Just because it's the letter of the law doesn't mean that it follows the spirit of the law. And he's around all those people, and Jesus said, well, yeah, I know that you guys don't believe in divorce. You know that divorce is bad. None of you have divorced. But you treat your spouse like you're divorced. Or I know that none of you believe in murder. None of you have killed anybody, right? Yeah, right. Okay, good. But you treat people like you wished they were dead. Like you're getting the letter of the law, but you're not following the spirit of the law. None of you have committed adultery, Jesus said, and yet you lust with your eyes and commit adultery in your heart. I know you can keep the letter of the law, but what about the spirit of the law? I don't know where you're going, but I'm glad that you're here. You know, one test to know, because you're like, well, am I really, like, am I defined by my limits? And you might be like, well, yeah, you know, I have defaults and I have flaws. Do I let that control me? Well, here's the deal. If you're defined by your limits, you'll never test the limits. If you're defined by the limits in your life, you will never test the limits around you, because you'll be defined by your limits. Instead, when you know that you have a leading role in God's mission, you will begin to see things with God's eyes, and you will confront those things that need to be confronted. How many of you are living in a rough limitation? And maybe you're not a barren widow in a foreign land, but maybe you're single, divorced, and with kids. How's that working out? There's a lot of injustice that happens to our single, divorced, with kids, and you can say, well, that's just the way it is. Or you can step in and you can say, you know what? Do I have my limits? Yes, I do. I am single, and I'm divorced, and I got kids. But you know what? I have a lead role in God's mission. And what I see is not okay. Some of you need to change the culture in which you find yourself. I think about our older folks, and I think about Naomi, who Ruth left at home. And I think about how we treat those who are retired, and maybe they're retired and alone, and what do we do with folks in that place? And is that a limit? Yeah, I think so. When you get older, it's like, well, Dad, now we treat like you, we just don't ask questions. It's like you're relegated to silence. Old people don't want to be a bother with anybody. Just show up and smile, and it's shallow and it's surface. But I can just feel the injustice that is present in our culture. And so many of us, our youngers in church, are dying for experience and wisdom from people who've been down the road. And yet we just drift apart in this separation. And I wonder if someone will just rise up and say, look, yeah, I'm old and I'm alone and I'm local and this is an injustice and I'm not okay with it. And you're not sleeping it well at night anyway, right? Nobody old sleeps well at night. So you might as well drink coffee all day. You know what I'm saying? And all of us youngers, and I say us youngers because look at me, I'm younger, right? We all love drinking coffee, so just have coffee with us. You can have coffee 5 times a day and it won't disrupt your sleeping pattern because you don't have one. You know what I'm saying? And share with us the wisdom and experience. Sometimes we just slip right into, and we let our limitation define who we are. Let your limitation direct your next step. You got a lot of time. That's your limitation. I got a lot of time right now. I'm calling you. I'm buying you coffee because you're broke. And I'm going to listen to your life story. And then you get to listen to them describe and you get to encourage them because you've already been down that road. And amazing things can happen. Don't let your limit define who you are. Let it direct you. You have a role in God's mission. Are you guys starting to see this? You have a role in God's mission, a lead role. Gosh, I don't know what verse I left you at. This is a great story. Yeah, well, so Boaz gives her a verdict. I'll just summarize some of this. Boaz gives her a verdict. After she says, hey, I want to pick up the grain, the good grain, not the leftover. I want to get the good stuff before it all disappears. I want to grab some of that. And it creates anything with Boaz. He says, okay. He's like, let her. Like, I know I got here late. And the foreman's like, look, she's been pushing the envelope. And Boaz is like, good. Let her push it. She can keep picking up in the front. In fact, I want her to stay in my fields. Like Boaz extends even more generosity. Let her stay in the fields. I want her to hang out with the women. I've already told the men not to harm her, so she'll be safe here. And by the way, she's going to get thirsty. I've seen, if she's working as hard as you say she's going to work, she's going to get thirsty. Tell her to drink out of the clay jars that my men have put in the fields. She can drink. She doesn't have to lose precious time in the harvest. She can drink and then get right back to work. When Ruth heard this, verse 10, at this she bowed down with her face to the ground and she asked Boaz, why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner? Boaz's quick reply goes something like this. I heard about when your husband died. Like, first of all, I know that you're from Moab. I know you're a Moabite from Moab. Everyone keeps telling me she's a Moabite from Moab. Yeah, I know. I got it. And I heard that your husband died. And then I heard that you left your mom and your dad in your house. And I heard that you chose to trust God with your life. And I heard that you chose to support your mother-in-law. And my prayer is that God would repay you. My prayer is that God would reward you for what you've done. You have trusted God with all of your life. And her story has been stirring up Bethlehem. And Boaz has already heard about it before he even met her. Now, the funny thing about Ruth is, and it's weird because I think sometimes we lose it here too. What happens when God blesses you with generosity even more than you think you deserve? I mean, she got what she asked for. She got more than she asked for. And this is such a pivotal moment because of all the things she could have said is, oh, hey, I don't want to ask for too much. I mean, I'm already asking to work in the sheaves with the women. Like, that's enough, Boaz. You don't have to give me all that. I don't need to stay. Just this one day is fine. I don't need to stay in your field every day. You don't have to give me the water. I got a water bottle. I'll be fine. Don't you worry about that. Almost like we say, well, I don't want to put you out. I don't want to ask for too much. I mean, thank you for giving me this, but don't give me any more. And we almost talk people out of their generosity. So crazy. I don't know. Why do we get weird like that? If somebody is blessing you, you know what you do? Take it. Just take it. Say, woo! Like, really? Like, that's awesome. May I have more? Like, well, check this out. She says in verse 13, may I continue to find favor in your eyes, my lowercase L Lord, my Lord. May I continue to find favor in your eyes, she said. You have put me at ease. It's almost like for the first time we get to see the humanity of Ruth. All the stress. And when you guys push through your limitation, because it is a limitation. She's a widow, she's barren, she's in a foreign land. When you have limitations, you feel the limitations. It is stressful. There's an act of trust. There's an act of risk. And here this guy has come along and we hear her say, you have put me at ease. And maybe for the first time she stood up straight and caught her breath. And maybe hope is beginning to flutter in her story. You put me at ease by speaking kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servants. And so think about this for a second. God is blessing her with so much more than she's asked for, or so much more than she needs. And one of the reasons why accepting generosity is such, it doesn't mean that you're selfish, for crying out loud. Here's the deal. I have a lead role in God's mission. I have a lead role in God's mission. Come on. I have a lead role in God's mission. Leadership is influence. Leadership is influence. I'm not a leader. Well, you got an influence of something. I know you influence something in that area. You are leading. I have a lead role in God's mission. Usually that area of leadership is going to be directly connected to your limitation. Because we have to go where we have to go. Women, barren, foreign. They got to go a certain path, and she goes down that path. But she understands that God wants to use her to influence other people. And so now God is bombarding her. And how cool is this for Boaz? I mean, Boaz actually sees a woman who is amazingly focused and committed, and he gets to come alongside and bless her. And if you've ever been generous and wanted to give your money to a good cause, isn't it great when you actually find one? You're like, man, it's so good to give my money to a place that matters. And how cool that she's receiving it. And now she's got this thing with, what am I going to do? How do I use my influence? Not always just about me. It is for me. God cares about your needs. But a lead role in God's mission means that you have influence. to influence other people for God's mission. It's not just about you and your needs. Remember what we said, that it's not a charity case. She also contributes to others. In her widow, in her barren, in her foreign, she can contribute to others. God uses weak people to change the world. Please don't define yourself by your limitation. Let it direct your steps, but it doesn't define who you are. So here's the deal with Boaz. I'm just going to summarize the rest of this chapter because it's 9 after 10 and the Seahawks are playing right now. You're like, finally, preacher, you're making some sense. So Boaz gives her more. You're like, what? He already gave her some. I know, he gave her more. So imagine them working. They come in for a meal because they actually do break to eat. They got to. It's hard work. And as they come in, he's like, hey, you can come eat with us. And imagine the men sitting and the women sitting, and then Ruth kind of siding up, kind of maybe a few feet behind the women. And as she sits there, Boaz makes it a point where he's the one that picks up the bread. He's the one, they had this wine vinegar. They actually dip it, kind of like we do communion. It's better than, I don't know, but they ate that. Like they said, they took the bread and dipped it and the wine vinegar, and they ate that for the meal. And so here he is serving her, raising her status. I, the owner, she's one of us now. And then as they eat this meal together, here's what he tells his guys. Like you know how the foreman comes along and says, hey, let's finish strong. Like, we're going to go out at the end of the day, don't make any mistakes. Boaz has this little pep talk, and he's like, I want you guys to be sloppy. Like, I want you to drop everything. Like, just drop stuff all over the place. And you women, don't pick everything up. Leave stuff. I want this field strewn with leftovers. And so they're like, okay, boss. And they go out, and they miss. And Ruth is working her tail off, trying to pick up all this stuff as a gleaner. It says that not that night when everything was over and they took everything to the threshing floor, she got to do her share and she walked out with 29 pounds. So we don't have any record of Jewish hired harvesters, but we have record of Babylonian hired harvesters. Same time period, same relative idea. A hard-working man could expect at most 2 pounds a day of harvested grain. She's packing almost 15 times that. The crazy thing is, Naomi has no idea why Ruth's been gone all this time. She's like, man, it's late. And you know, like when you send your daughter-in-law out first time, and you're not sure what she's going to come up, and there's men, and they're not always nice, and bad things could happen, and why isn't she back, and it's getting dark, and she hears footsteps, and she checks the street, and she looks, and it's just her neighbor. She hears more footsteps, and they keep just walking by, and keep walking by, until finally, and imagine poor Ruth, I mean, 29 pounds across town, like, that's a heavy sack, right? It's like Costco without the cart, you know what I'm saying? Pack that out to your car, I'm just doing a little Ruth. Yeah, Ruth did it, I got to try this out. Yeah, it's a drag. It is a drag. And I just make this stuff up. I mean, this isn't how the story goes, but this is how I see it ending. I see Ruth walking up to the door, and I feel like Naomi saw her coming as she opens the door. And I almost feel like there's Ruth, and her eyes are welling up because she's like, wow, Naomi's not going to believe. I can't describe what God has done. And she opens the door, and she's so overwhelmed, she drops the bag, and it shakes the floor of the house. And her eyes are so full, and Naomi doesn't know what to say, and they just grab each other, and they hold, and they have this emotional embrace. And I think Naomi's starving because they don't have any food because they're broke. And I think Naomi starts taking a little bit of grain out of that bag and walking to the kitchen to prepare food. And they say it takes about 2 hours to prepare raw grain. And then the crazy thing is that Ruth, not only is she packing 29 pounds of this raw grain, she also got fed so much for lunch that she put that in her bag. And so now she's like, oh, wait, Naomi. I got some food right here. We can just eat this. And Naomi is like, are you kidding me? I think this might be the very first fast food meal in the Bible. Like, I think this is it. And I see these women sitting down at the table talking late into the night. And I want you guys to think about this idea. I know that you have limits. We all have them. That's not the problem. We all got limits. They don't define you, but they will direct you because you don't have a choice. But just remember that I have a lead role in God's mission. Come on, show me how you got this. I have a lead role in God's mission. Here's the story we're invited into. You know, Jesus is credited with creating the earth. The Word was God, and the Word was with God, and that's a W, capital W word, and the Word is how the earth was created. So we believe Jesus was he got to be a part of the creation. And so here we are, formed out of the dust of the earth. And Jesus helped create our bodies, the humanity. And so then the story goes that Jesus came down, like Jesus is divine, and he came down and he took on the very form that he created. Talk about limiting yourself. And so we are brought up in a story of a God who limited himself by taking on human flesh. And Jesus came down because limits direct your next steps. And he came down and he wasn't like, oh yeah, I'm messed up now. He's like, oh man, I'm going to teach these guys. And he inspired us and he did miracles and he taught us. And he served and he sacrificed. And it says that the way that Jesus lived within the limitation of the human body, he lived a sinless life, falsely accused on the cross. And you're like, why would Jesus do that? Because Jesus had a role in God's mission. And Jesus' role ain't the same as your role. Isn't the same as your role. Jesus came to save the world. That's what God asked Jesus to do. And he did it. And he came to save us, so that we might live. Are you ready to take that limitation, let it direct you, not define you? You have a role in God's story. Would you guys pray with me this morning? Father, thank you so much for... God, I'm just so grateful that you are God who gives us purpose and meaning and mission for our lives, that we are not just buying time, we're not just waiting, we're not just out to pasture, that you want us to have this impact. And God, we want to be the people that work hard for you. We want to be the people that challenge injustice. We want to be the ones that accept blessing. We want to be the people who have leadership and influence that your mission might advance on earth as it is in heaven. And we don't have it all figured out, God, but I pray that your Spirit would ignite a fire within us that would not settle for anything less. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Lake Taps podcast. I hope you were encouraged and challenged by today's message. I pray that you would invite God to do the work in your heart that only he can do. I also want to invite you to become part of our Lake Taps family. Download our app, connect to our community, and give. You can become an investor in growing God's kingdom through the ministry of Lake Taps. We'll see you next time. God bless.